September 6, 2016, and 7 p.m. We're going to start the city council meeting for the city of Cedar Hills, and we'll start with an invocation given by Councilwoman Reese and a pledge by Councilman Geddes.
Heavenly Father, we are grateful for the opportunity to meet together tonight as a council. We're grateful for this wonderful city that we live in. We ask you to bless us that we will be able to discuss matters tonight in a peaceful manner and to make decisions that will best benefit our city. And these things we pray for in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
All right, the audience, please rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmembers Reese and Geddes. We will have a approval of the meeting's agenda. Does anyone, I'd like to take a motion to approve the meeting's agenda.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We'll start with public comment time on the left with David, if you'd like to start us out.
Let's see, I think...
We have public comment. Does anyone know, has anyone checked to see if anyone signed up for public comment?
There's no one signed up.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if anyone would like to.
Would anyone like to take 3 minutes and talk about any agenda item we have here? Okay, we will go to the consent agenda then, and what's on the consent agenda this time? Is it the, do we have any previous notes or anything like that?
It's to assign someone to the Cultural Arts Committee, but it doesn't say who that someone is.
So the mayor had contacted our city recorder to have her put on this on, and then I do not believe she received a name.
Okay.
So I think we should
pass on that.
Table
this time.
That one.
Okay. So we'll table the consent agenda at this time.
Make a motion on that? Would you vote to table it?
You can if you want.
Okay. I think we'll just move on with that and table that the next time. And let's see, we'll go to city reports and business. Go ahead, David.
Okay, council, our fall sports season is up and running, and our taught soccer and our soccer programs started a few weeks ago. Everything's going very well. Flag football is kicking off tonight, so we have a lot of our residents doing that. There's 437 participants this year and 391 last year, so that's a good increase. So thanks to our rec department. The golf course netting is still scheduled to be replaced according to the council's decision. That will be done first week of October. And we have a new group that's renting our facility on Thursdays, the Spark Singers. And it's a company that Sherry Whitehead started, and they used to have a company called Celebrations. Really good group there. Timpanogos Special Service District Board met this last month, and we had just a few items to do some improvements there at the plant. So that's all that happened there. And I wanted to update the city council that we have a pressurized irrigation water main that is damaged. It's right on Canyon Road on the opposite side of Morgan Boulevard. So we are able to send water to the upper irrigation tank through another line, but it cannot send the same amount of flow that our main line can. And so we are limited. The tank has water in it, but we anticipate that tonight they will drain the tank. Our residents will use enough water to drain that tank. And then it will slowly recharge again tomorrow. But for the next couple of days, there will be limited pressure because the tank will drain. So I did send out a few emails to the council today. And then also it's posted on the Facebook and on the webpage. And we also sent out a Everbridge communication. So,
can I ask a quick question? On the updated netting, It's been several months since we approved that. Were we waiting for the season to end so that it wouldn't stop people from using the course, or was it more of a timing thing with the contractors?
It's a scheduling issue with the netting company.
Okay.
So we actually have to line up a couple of companies to do this. One is Niels Fugel. They're the ones who do the poles.
Yep.
So that's one contractor. They had to put it in their schedule, and then the netting company has to come in behind them to remove the existing net and then put up the new net.
It is kind of convenient, though, that we're going into the slower season when it'll be down.
That'll
help.
The golf course will still be open when mm-hmm. they come to replace the net. We will have to shut the driving range down during that time.
Right. And then I just wanted to say that you guys have put up with a lot this year with the pressurized irrigation system and handled it so well. So I just wanted to say kudos to you and kudos to the previous city council for making such a robust system for us. So
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Another quick question for you. Do you have a status update on Bay Hill Park?
Bay Hill Park is out to bid right now. So we have contractors who have picked up plans, and they're putting together their prices. We anticipate that the bid opening will be, I believe, on the 15th, and we will bring the results to the next city council meeting to award to a contractor. Can I update you on one other issue?
Sure.
And that's the Tibble Fork Dam Rehabilitation Discharge Event.
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, a lot of highly contaminated water came down the canyon in a big rush when they released that flow from Tibble Fork. They did take samples, and those samples did show elevated concentrations of heavy metals, and especially in the sediment. The contractor built a bypass channel around Tibble Fork Lake, so now none of the water actually goes through the lake. It actually goes around the lake. And ever since they have done that, the water cleared up substantially. Now, it is still bringing some of that sediment down the river that was deposited from the discharge event. But they have determined that the water does not exceed agricultural use limits or recreational use limits. In other words, you can walk in the water, you can touch the water, you can water your crops, you can water animals. You cannot drink it. You cannot consume it. But we couldn't consume it before. It didn't meet drinking water standards before either. So with that, we actually started to take our water turn into our irrigation ponds. And as we get more information, we'll let you know. We took some samples in Heritage Park down in the water that went through the park there. We took those samples at the end of last week. They, because of the holiday and because of the number of samples that they had already collected, they were not processed. They probably will get done this week. As soon as those results become available, then we will also post those and send those out.
Do you know which group was in charge of this project of redoing Tibble Fork?
There are several parties to that. NRCS mm-hmm. is the main group, and then Forest Service and the North Utah County Water Conservancy District also. So it's a project in cooperation with many entities. So
what does NRCS stand for?
Trying to think of the name of that. I'll find that.
Is this like a special service district, or is it a government agency?
It's a government agency, yes.
Okay. I was really surprised that they didn't foresee that if you ran a river right through the lake, it would take all that sediment they're trying to protect down the river.
They actually did have a discussion about sediments coming down the river.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't anticipate that it would be that concentrated,
mm-hmm.
but they did actually have that that discussion. NRCS stands for Natural Resources Conservation Service. And I believe if you go to nrcs.usda.gov, you can search for Tibble Fork, and they actually have information on the NRCS website as well.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Daniel?
I do not have a report today.
Jenny?
The Parks and Trails Committee met. The August breakfast was a success, and they're going to plan it again next year. They did say that they're going to need extra help with serving food and cleanup because that seems to be where the bottleneck is. And then our next meeting is this week, and we're meeting at the roundabout to discuss roundabout improvements and beautification.
I can't remember if I reported on what happened with the Bayview landfill. That was after our last meeting, wasn't it? So I could report on that. So the at the North Point Solid Waste Special Service District, we did vote as a group to join the New Era group to purchase the the Bayview landfill from South Utah Valley Special Service District. And so we will be participating in that. The vote was 4-11. So four cities voted nay, five cities voted yay, and then we had a couple of at-large members that voted yay also. So it was 7-4. And so that is a project that will be getting underway, and North Point Special Service District will have one member on the board, one or two members on the board of that New Era group. So that's how that ended, and that's all I have to report.
The Arts the Arts Committee meeting met, had their annual kickoff. They've just got some upcoming events such as the Adult Date Night. They're looking at either doing island or country type dancing. We'll be hearing the best of. What was the date on that? I just tried looking it up.
It was supposed to be the 11th, but it's actually a holiday, so we're...
Okay, it's in limbo. We'll let you know.
But it is in September?
November.
November, oh, okay.
November.
So it's up in the
air right now,
Dave.
Sounds fun.
So, Mike?
I don't have anything to report on. Utah Valley Dispatch meets this week, so.
Okay. All right, we'll move to the scheduled items then. Item number 7 is a review action on a resolution authorizing the city to participate in the Utah County Community Development Block Grant. And David will be presenting on that.
Council, in your packet is a proposed resolution for the City of Cedar Hills to participate in the Utah County Community Development Block Grant Program. And the CDBG program allocates funding to various cities, municipalities, or nonprofits within the county that that do a qualified project. And in the interlocal agreement, some of you had some questions, and tonight we have Michelle here from MAC. You work for MAC Land? So come on up. You can ask Michelle some questions that you had earlier.
I think I got all my questions answered. I mean, I guess I could ask them again real quick.
There was one question, and I asked about the law enforcement.
Yes.
And Michelle has.
Okay. So my question on that was on page 9, item 10. It says, each city affirms it has adopted and is enforcing a policy prohibiting excessive use of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We don't have our own law enforcement agency. We contract with American Ford.
Okay.
And so I didn't know, do we need to have a policy like that?
No, you wouldn't need to initiate a policy. Some of the largest programs, CDBG programs around the country, Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, and these are federal funds. So those are really addressing the needs of some of those larger urban areas. None of our cities or towns in the county currently have adopted policies to those effect.
Okay.
Everything that was said in there is pretty much something that is the law throughout the whole country, is that you don't use excessive force and things like that. It seems to me more of a political statement encouraging people to... encouraging civil rights activism to me. You know, it's almost like it's the government saying, we want to encourage this activity. How would you respond to that?
Well, it is the federal regulation that verbiage is in each interlocal agreement.
Right. Yep.
So if HUD came back and they wanted the cities to prove they had that policy, I mean, can we strike that from the interlocal agreement? If none of the cities have it,
mm-hmm.
then... do we want to even have it in there where it's saying we shall do it, but if none of the cities are doing it,
right.
that just worries me that at some point HUD can come back and say, show us your policy, and we have nothing.
I understand that. So in speaking with our HUD rep, who we've worked to, and the HUD attorneys to draft this agreement, it is required language the way it is, but they have assured us that there's no follow-up action needed for the cities and towns, and particularly with the types of projects that we fund in Utah County. We fund a lot of water and sewer, we fund a lot of public service, ADA upgrades, things that are very different from our larger urban areas across the country.
Okay. Well, as I understand it, with Cedar Hill signing this interlocal agreement, we're not saying that the city of Cedar Hill gets to participate in any of this funds at all. This is just generally helping our Utah County.
So by signing the interlocal agreement for the next three fiscal years, you would be eligible to receive CDBG dollars if you chose to apply. You have been participating for the past 6 years. It's the same interlocal agreement, except on page 8, there's some updated civil rights language. And Cedar Hills thus far has not chosen to apply. If you don't sign the agreement, then for the next three fiscal years, you would not be eligible for CDBG dollars, and then you'd have to wait till 2020 to re-enter the program.
So if we did want to, for instance, some of the projects you said, say we have some handicap corners that would like to ask their update to handicap accessible.
Yes.
Could we apply?
Absolutely.
For that, those funds?
Yep, it's a competitive application process. We take applications one time per year, and then the committee meets in March and funds projects every year.
So if I understand correctly from David, really to qualify, you have to have some low-income housing in your city, which we don't. Is that not the case?
The most of the projects do target low to moderate income individuals, but things like ADA ramps, there's no income or ADA accessibility in public buildings, ADA curb and gutter, those have no income requirements. Any services that are provided to seniors, there's a list that there's no income qualification needed. And so there are activities in Cedar Hills that would be eligible for CDBG dollars.
So we should have applied for that to get the elevator in this building.
Yes, we just funded an elevator in Pleasant Grove and Linden.
What about to fix one?
To fix one? Well, yeah, well, you have to have an operational elevator to be ADA accessible, so yes.
So we could still apply and possibly qualify even without having a large low-income
Correct.
Population.
Yes.
That's good.
For example, Elkridge, we funded a park rehabilitation in Elkridge. We also fund economic development. We do planning services.
Don't want to interrupt you, but when you say park, we have a new park coming online. We wanted to have some ADA equipment for
Absolutely.
Children with special needs.
Yes, that would be an eligible project.
And that doesn't have a low income.
Correct, because the federal government assumes that disabled children and adults are at least 51% low to moderate income, so they don't require you to survey or take any kind of income information.
Okay. Do we have any clue as to, I mean, I know it's competitive, but how much are we talking about that potentially we could access?
So the county receives approximately $1.2 million every year. The average city grant award is between $200,000 and $300,000 a year. We do smaller projects, but these are federal dollars, so they have more requirements. So we encourage contracts to be at least $30,000.
What other funding does MAG get besides from the federal government for this program?
So this is all from the federal government.
Doesn't MAG have other sources of funding besides the federal government?
Yes, but not for this program.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering as a whole what the MAG has been kind of a mystery to me because it's been involved when we had discussions about whether we were going to take Canyon Road or not. Then MAG money was discussed through that also. I'm just wondering what the sources of income
are. Federal funds, state funds. We have local planning assistance. All the cities and towns pay into our local dollars. but primarily federal and state funding is our largest funding source.
And federal is the major funding, and states less than federal? Or
yes. Would,
and then mm-hmm. cities even less than that, so the bigger mm-hmm. the entity, the more funding that comes?
Yeah.
Okay.
So once a year you can apply for them, and the funds are allocated also yearly then?
Correct.
And when is that deadline?
So we're actually, we'll be holding how to apply workshops in October. We'll send out those notices soon. The application is due the first Friday in February. Decisions are made in March, and then contracts, if it's construction, it's July 1, and it's 18 months for those kind of contracts.
How many employees does MAG have?
Approximately 40, but not all. We have a lot of Meals on Wheels drivers, part-time caseworkers, so those are not FTEs.
And how's the head of MAG chosen?
Our executive director is chosen. Our governing body is our executive council. It includes the mayor from each city and town within our region, as well as the county commission or county council from Utah Summit and Wasatch County. Mm-hmm. And then within that council, we have a smaller functioning committee made up of approximately 6 elected officials that make the hiring decisions for the executive director position. And that's who our executive director reports to.
And are those also mayors from the towns?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it's really all locally managed. There's no federal government employees. It's all
correct.
Locally managed.
Okay. Yep.
That's good.
So approximately how many applications do you receive and how many are actually approved?
Sure. So we have kind of 2 pots of funding within CDBG. We have the public service mm-hmm. where all the nonprofits. That's the more competitive pot. And that's only 15% of that $1.2 million. The larger pot is for construction, ADA, those types of projects that the cities go after. And we typically have about 8 to 10 applications from cities, and usually some years we fund all of them because we have enough to go around and the dollar, the asking is right. And then some years we don't fund between 1 and 3 projects.
And then what kind of federal oversight does your program have, if any? Are there other things besides this wording? See, I only see the wording, and mostly the wording in here that they're, you know, kind of pushing a little bit of an agenda, but do they have any other agendas that the MAG itself has to follow from the federal government?
We have a representative from HUD that monitors our program. Mm-hmm. Most of it's a desk monitoring. We've been in Urban County since 2011, and we've only had 1 on-site monitoring. And they're basically making sure that we're just following the federal regulations, managing the program, doing what we're supposed to do with the money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are projects subject to federal wage or Davis-Bacon?
Absolutely. If it's a construction project, it will be a Davis-Bacon wage.
Any other questions for Michelle?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm glad Michelle was here tonight. She shed a whole lot more light on that subject. So thank you.
You got
any other questions?
I'm not sure I have any more questions. I have some comments that I want to make. Does anyone have any questions before we discuss this a little more?
No.
All right. I do have some prepared comments that I wanted to say, and that I wanted to read a little bit from my thoughts regarding this. As an elected official, we have made the oath that we would protect and defend the Constitution, and from my perspective, the Constitution talks about the limited activities that our federal government can engage in, and there are 18 short sentences describing these activities, and the Bill of Rights was adopted by the states to protect the states further from federal government overreach. And the 10th Amendment says that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And the purpose of the Bill of Rights was to restrain government in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, according to the preamble of the Bill of Rights. And so, as I take a step back and analyze this, the government takes our funds through taxes, and then they have the funds go to the federal government, it goes through the bureaucracy, and then they give it back to us for certain activities with strings attached. And to me, that is outside the scope of the Constitution. So I will be that's something that I think that we ought to consider when we look at things like this. Do we support things that are unconstitutional? Is that against our oath of office? And so that's something that I wanted to just talk about briefly. And then the last comment that I have is I am concerned as the federal government grows that, you know, everyone has a mentality of taking money from the federal government, and with the debt getting up to $20 trillion now and so many entitlement programs out there, do we ever take a stand and say, we're not going to take this money because we don't want the federal government going outside its bounds? Are we in a situation like the book Animal Farm where we, as long as it's money benefiting us, then we're always going to take it, and we're going to try for more and more and more until the federal government goes, you know, belly up because the debt gets so extensive? But anyway, based on these things, I feel it's my responsibility to vote no on this because of I don't feel like it follows the Constitution. But anyway, that's my thoughts. Anyone else want to share some thoughts on this?
Yes, I'd like to share a few thoughts on that subject. Your interpretation of the 10th Amendment was directly ruled against in a case called United States v. Darby Lumber. In that case, the court stated that the 10th Amendment is not a limitation upon the authority of the national government to resort to all means for the exercise of a granted power which are appropriate and plainly adapted to the permitted end. The courts have consistently ruled that the federal government has power under both the Commerce Clause and the Welfare Clause to spend in these manners. United States v. Butler, Helvering v. Davis, South Dakota v. Dole have all ruled that the Welfare Clause is to be interpreted expansively and that the power to tax and spend is an independent power. So what this means is that you may wish the federal government was smaller, you may wish that it did less. That does not mean that the CDBG program is unconstitutional, just your personal preference. So I disagree with your interpretation of the Constitution. And I feel in taking the oath as well to defend our Constitution that this is not approving this particular program does not violate my oath. I take that oath quite seriously as well.
I've got some. Yeah, we live in a very religious community. We pray before. Well, most of us pray before council meeting, and the general thought is that the Constitution has been inspired of God. That is an agreeable belief that the people of this community, the majority, would believe in. It's the same God that has given the same group of individuals different references, and one of those was to take care of the meek and the poor. Okay, this definitely is a program that Michelle offered. It's the disabled, meek, you know, the poor, the low to moderate income. We've got caseworkers. Okay, caseworkers are out there not to help those that don't need it, but they're out there to help those that are struggling. Meals on Wheels. I had no idea Meals on Wheels. You know, and I've had first interaction with people on Meals on Wheels, and typically these are elderly people that they wouldn't eat if it wasn't for the fact that Meals on Wheels shows up and gets them. So I agree with you, Rob, that there is pork belly spending out there in the federal government. I won't argue with that, but I'm going to agree with Daniel on supporting this program because it meets everything that I think us as a society should be doing. We should be helping the less fortunate. We should be helping the disabled. I believe it's our Constitution obligation to take care of those that can't take care of themselves. And I understand that they get abused, but let's say out of 100 people, 99 of them abuse it. I would rather have 99 abuse it than that one person go without. That's just how I feel, and I believe that's what makes the United States a great nation, you know, that we don't see the shanty towns up along the mountain, because we do help the poor, the meek, the less fortunate. So
I would just, I want to make one final thought, and that is, I think it's very, it's totally constitutional for states to take that, and I think that the closer you get to the source of the benefits that are given, the more appreciative people are for those benefits. If a town collected those taxes, or if a state collected those taxes, which completely is within the constitutional right to take care of the poor that way, then I would agree with it. But if it's the federal government, I think it's not constitutional. But any other thoughts before we have a vote?
I'd like to just say one thing. As I've studied this resolution and the ideas behind it, and then actually being enlightened a little bit tonight as well, I'm totally within, I feel like within the oath that I took, I don't see this as being any kind of violation of the Constitution or anything like that.
Okay. With that said, does someone want to make a motion?
Quick question. I'm just curious, have you guys ever been challenged on the constitutionality of it, the program?
No, there are three cities in which I kind of got opted out, but they didn't challenge us, no.
Okay. Mr. Shaw, any concerns about the constitutional issues?
With respect to the 10th Amendment, no. With respect to the right of the cities to participate or not, I guess I would defer to you and your elected status, as well as your rights of free speech and how you vote. And so exercise it wisely. But from the constitutional perspective of can the federal government collect taxes and then remit it through a variety of programs, I certainly would hope that, that could be found unconstitutional, because that might set my career for the next 50 years. There are enough programs that do these sorts of things. So I think, while I think there certainly can be a robust discussion about whether or not the certain programs are as they should be, or viable or not, frankly, you have the same discussions every first and third Tuesday in these meetings with respect to the monies that you have stewardship over, as does the legislature at its level. So I would just remind you that that constitutionality is not necessarily the pivotal question. Rather, it's how do you exercise your fiduciary duties as elected officials?
I do have one other question for Michelle. Can you tell me, how is MAG formed? Was that is it a county agency? Was it an interlocal agreement?
There are seven association of governments in the state of Utah, and it was a legislative act of the state.
So the state formed it. Okay. Okay. So just a couple other comments. Rob mentioned that somehow assistance is more appreciated when the tax money is collected more locally.
Or when it's given from local sources.
It seemed like an odd comment to me. It seems to me that when an elderly person gets a good meal, they're not going to first check how was the meal paid for, and then I'll decide how I feel about it, depending on where they're going to be happy they're getting fed. And then the other comment I wanted to make is, our taxes are already going to be collected, so this isn't going to change how the federal government operates based on our decision today. I think our decision comes down to, should we apply to get some of our money back so we can help the poor in our community? Mm-hmm. For me, that's a clear yes.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, let's say that your neighbor comes and gives you some money personally to help you out. You're going to be much more thankful, as opposed to if there's a federal program, you'll feel entitled. There's a big difference between entitled and thankful. And a lot of times with federal programs, people feel entitled to the benefits they get versus feeling thankful.
I think the vast majority of people are happy for the assistance they get and then try to better their lives.
Yeah. All right.
I've got one. You mentioned there's a couple cities not in the county. Do you represent the county or the MAG?
I'm an employee of Mountain Lakes Association of Governments, and we administer Utah County's program on behalf of Utah County.
Okay. What about these other cities like Provo and Orem? And
they have their own CDBG programs, okay, because it's based on population. So Provo, Orem, Lehigh have direct from HUD
$70. Okay, perfect. That's...
Well, I'd like to make a motion if we're ready.
Yep.
I move that we approve Resolution 9-6-2016A, a resolution of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, to participate in the Utah County Community Development Block Grant CDBG program, contingent upon legal review, as we discussed in work session.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. We'll go roll call vote. Mike?
Aye.
Ben?
Yes.
I'll say no. Nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Passes 4-1. And now we've got item number 8, review action on Lakeshore Trails PUD subdivision fencing. And Chandler, you, I believe, are in charge of this discussion. Thank you, Michelle, for coming.
Thank you. All right. As was mentioned in the work session, as per City Code 18.5-18G, Lakeshore Trails is a planned unit development and as such requires Planning Commission recommendation and City Council approval for the subdivision fence to be put in. What they're proposing is a 6-foot high concrete wall fence similar to what's been put in at the Questar substation there just south of the city building along Canyon Road. The only difference being that it'll be on top of a landscaping wall. Staff has been out with the developers on site on a number of occasions to look at the project and the proposals, and you can see in your packet the location of the fence along Canyon Road, and then you can see the profile of what staff is proposing along with the developer. You can see that from the top back of curb, meaning between where the curb meets the sidewalk, 15 or 5 feet, there's the sidewalk, then another 5 feet, there's riprap, which is simply just this size rock, and then another 5 feet, where that's where the property line is, and then 5 feet from the property line will be where the fence is, totaling 15 feet from the top back of curb, which is per the street side enclosure area code in the fence ordinance in the city code. The fence is not to exceed 6 feet in height. The fence and landscaping wall need to remain at least 3 feet from any power pole. During the construction, access to manholes need to be approved by the city engineer and the building inspector. The landscaping wall needs to remain less than 40 inches in height, and the slope for the project not to exceed 3-1, which is our city design requirements for a fill. Any questions?
Chandler, am I reading? I just want to be sure I'm reading the diagram correctly. I'm looking at the plat that you guys showed us, and there's a purple line there on the far left along Canyon Road. This is where the fence is going to be, right? So
correct.
It's not surrounding the entire community. It's just
lining. It's just along Canyon Road.
That's what I thought.
So where it flares up away from Canyon Road on those two sections, that's where it'll drop down to 3 feet to keep clear vision areas open.
How long is the fence going to be?
The duration of the entirety of the project.
Do you know approximately how long that is?
No idea. Dan, do you know how long that 500 feet?
Okay.
And I assume this is primarily for privacy of those residences.
Yeah, it's a privacy. It's a sound barrier.
Yeah.
Canyon Road is a busier street, so in order, and these homes will, this will be their side. They won't be facing Canyon Road. It'll be their side. So they'll be facing north or south, depending on which lot they are. And this fence will simply be there to protect them, give them kind of a buffer from Canyon Road.
And is the fence constructed in materials to provide a sound buffer? Is that the idea?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Will it provide a sound buffer?
I believe so, yeah. It'll raise it up above. It'll do that, yeah.
Okay.
As best as you can there.
Yeah.
There'll still be some noise, but it'll definitely be reduced.
So just for the record, I am going to recuse myself as I'm the owner of this project, but I'm willing to answer any questions you might have, or my partner who's in the audience, Dan Wilson.
What color is the fence going to be?
It would be similar to the one that's already halfway, or it's done on the north side of our project, which is actually just kind of it's a concrete wall. It's been kind of made to look like stone and rock and stuff.
Okay. Kind of tannish color. It blends
it's
with
kind of earthen colors, I guess, yes. With a little bit of orange and purple in it.
So it's not pure white. It's not going to...
No, it's kind of looks like stone.
Okay.
It's a concrete. It's concrete slabs that are molded into stone-looking things. Okay.
I feel like the biggest risk for the council is that someone might say, okay, we approved something to help you out because you're on the council. And I just wanted to say that I've asked the questions that I could have, David, to make sure that, you know, there's no special treatment, that this is something that's going to be good. You know, that's not gonna hurt anything. Right. And I just wanted to make sure that no one ever says that, because we don't give any special treatment to any council members, and that sometimes it might even go the other way, that we try to make sure that we're not doing that, and we just want to cross our I's or cross our T's, dot our I's, and make sure that everything's correct. But I feel like I asked the correct questions, and everything looks like we're treating you fairly and appreciately. And so anyway,
thank you again.
There's already similar fencing like that on Canyon Road and other subdivisions.
Yep. Just as on that note, the 15 feet, it's not an arbitrary number. It's from the code. If you look at this diagram in your code, you can see that from the lip of curb and gutter, which is the top back of curb, 15 feet is the street side enclosure area. That's what we're requiring him, because these are the side yards of these homes. So that's why the 15 feet is there from the top back of curb there. So it is per city code.
The Planning Commission's already voted on this.
Yeah, they've made the recommendation. That's why it's here. They made a recommendation for the council for approval.
Any other questions or comments on this?
No, I'd just like to make a motion.
Go ahead.
I move that we approve the proposed fence along Canyon Road, the Canyon Road portion of Lakeshore Trails PUD, subject to the following items. Fence shall not exceed 6 feet in height. Fence must remain 3 feet from any power pole. Access to manholes to be approved by the city engineer and building official. Landscaping wall to remain less than 40 inches in height. Slope is not to exceed 3:1.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I got one question. No, it's been second. Mike, is there any fire hydrants along that? I haven't.
Not inside that wall.
How about outside? Is there
up the street?
It's up the street.
So there's none on Canyon Road? Okay. Okay, perfect.
So I have a second in motion. We'll go to the vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. I think that's everybody, so unanimous. At this time, I'd entertain a motion to go into exec session.
I would like to make a motion to go into executive session pursuant to UCA 52-4-2051A to discuss the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of an individual in the Vista Room, Cedar Hills, Utah.
And also property.
And property. And UCA 52-4-2051D to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property.
Okay, I have a motion. Do we need a roll call on this one?
I'll second the motion, first of all.
Oh, yeah. Do we have to have a roll call to go into exec session?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Mike?
Aye.
Ben?
Aye.
I'll say aye. Jenny?
Aye.
Aye.
Dan? Okay. We'll go into exec session now, and we'll have to ask.